Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for September 14th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Aperture Laboratories. We do what we must because we can. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt. Behind the boards, our excellent producer, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm doing well. We have some guest hosts joining us today as well. Patrick Beja from France. All of France.
Hey. Yes. How are you doing, everyone?
Frenchspin.com. Welcome, Patrick. Thanks for filling in. Also joining us is Ayaz Akhtar from thisoldnerd.com.
That's right. Apparently, Tom Merritt is set on getting his show canceled, so he asked me back.
That's right. We're like, you know what? Sponsors aren't really liking this show. Let's just finish it off.
Tank it.
Let's roll with it.
All right. Thank you guys for filling in. Actually, Becky was supposed to be here today, but at the last minute, she got called away by ABC to do a very important story about airline seats. So we're very happy that you guys were able to fill in at the last moment. Nokia having a big festival. Where is this going on? Is this up in Scandinavia, or are they having it somewhere else?
It seems like it's in London, I think.
Is it in London?
Yeah, Nokia World Show in London Tuesday morning, and they are out of their minds. The first thing they started saying was that they were not apologizing. They are fine with being Nokia, and they had the little self-affirmation moment, and they are not apologizing that they're not Apple.
Yes.
That was a little odd.
Nokia's going through a tough, challenging transition as the continuing leader in smartphone market share and regular phone market share and operating system market share, but we're not going to take it anymore, being the leader of all those things. We have a lot more work to do. They say they have laid the foundation for success. The reason they're so defensive is the fact that they've been losing that market share, even though they're the number one and they're the dominant, especially in the smartphone area. They're being eaten alive by all the other competitors, iOS, BlackBerry, Android, maybe not WebOS so much, but they're all working together. And Nokia's feeling challenged. They used to be the undisputed leader in this space.
Well, the thing is, they're still the undisputed leader, but it's in numbers they are definitely leading on every aspect. But they are losing a lot of goodwill and, you know, mind share, maybe not as much as more than market share. And that is important. And as much as I think that they are being a little bit semi-obnoxious, semi-silly, saying we're proud not to be Apple and not to be a super successful company making millions and billions every single minute, it's good to see them coming back and fighting back and a little bit, you know, it's the first stage, the first step in something that needs to be bigger. But sure, why not? Start with this. It's good.
Yeah, especially since they're all quitting. You know, the guy leading this is the vice president of mobile, who we mentioned yesterday is stepping down.
I think they said they wanted to go a new direction, and I'm inferring this part. The direction they want to go is up, because
that would
they
be a
have,
new direction for them.
Yeah, it would be completely new. They haven't been doing that since the early 2000s. Back when I was originally getting a cell phone, Nokias were really cool, and they had the smallest phones, the best form factors. And now they're just basically they priced themselves out of existence in the United States of America. I have no idea why they don't have deals with carriers, but hopefully, maybe this new guy in 2012—that's when the new CEO is coming in. Maybe he'll have a better direction for the company.
Well, let's be clear here. The keynote was delivered by Ansi Van Yoki, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Mobile Solutions. And he's leaving soon. But what you're referring to there is the fact that the chairman, Jorma Ollila, I'm saying it wrong, but you get the gist. The chairman of Nokia is going to leave his post in 2012. So they lost their CEO. They've got the Microsoft guy coming in to replace him. They've lost their head of mobile. He's given the keynote anyway. And they're going to lose their chairman in a couple of years. It's cleaning house time at Nokia is what this means.
Which is good, right? Who here thinks that's a bad thing?
Well, let's see how good it is. They launched a bunch of new phones. that are expected to be the saviors, at least the current saviors of Nokia. They made a big deal about the N8 entertainment smartphone. That one's actually been out. We've seen that one before. They also unveiled the C6 and C7 phones, which are smartphones, but they're more targeted towards that social networking space, kind of like WebOS. And the E7 corporate communicator, which has Symbian 3 and is a monster. That thing has a big old QWERTY keyboard, a big old screen, and they essentially were trying to bill it as your entire office desktop in a smartphone.
Yeah, it's a 4-inch screen. It looks like a huge keyboard. It looks like it'd be a lot of fun. It's good. It's a nice form factor. It's not the standard slider. It actually slides up at an angle. I think it looks kind of nice. I've always loved the communicator since I used to see it in movies, you know, a big phone that would open up like that. But, I mean, why are they sticking to Symbian? I mean, don't they have MeeGo and that's Linux-based or why Symbian still?
Well, Symbian's the dominant operating system still, and they've put so much work behind it. Why wouldn't they? I think what they're saying here is we're trying to hedge our bets with MeeGo. And it's not quite there yet. So for our workhorse, we're going to go with Symbian. We'll try MeeGo on some more risky phones where we can afford to take a leap.
Well, it still feels a little bit like, I don't know, when I hear everything from that lineup, which is, okay, seems kind of solid on the surface, it still feels like they're making new stuff with the old stuff that they have in-house. And I'm not sure that's the direction that consumers are going to get behind. Symbian, kind of that huge phone, you know, it looks like the old work smartphones that you had maybe 5 years ago. And maybe they should move on, but maybe they're not ready to move on quite as radically as they should now.
Well, maybe they'll get some help from Peter Skillman, the former Palm Design VP. He's been hired on as MeeGo User Experience Chief. So they're trying everything they can. Let's move to Craigslist. They are going to respond to the congressional request that they testify. They'll be sending William Clint Powell. Wow, what a political name. You got Powell in there. You got William. You got Clint. William Clint Powell is Craigslist's Director of Customer Service and Law Enforcement Relations. I'm going to call him Sheriff of Craigslist.
It's a great
and
title.
More importantly,
Sheriff Powell.
If you call William, if you call him Bill, then you have Bill Clint.
Bill Clint Powell.
Yeah, it's sort of
he's going to testify before the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security in a hearing on domestic minor sex trafficking. And they're expected to explain why they unilaterally took down their adult services section and temporarily put up a censored image before they took that down. And what they think is happening now that the adult services section is gone. So it'd be interesting to keep an eye on.
I might watch C-SPAN to see how Clint, I figure he's named Clint because he's like Clint Eastwood. He's going to stare a hole into the soul of his accusers, and they will stop asking him questions. That's what's going to happen. Well, you watch tomorrow.
The question is, what are they accusing Craigslist of? If Craigslist didn't do what they did with the censored thing because of government regulation, then they just did it because they wanted to. And in that case, why would Congress need to know? They just did something that was maybe a publicity stunt. Or, you know, what I don't understand what they are asking Craigslist if the government is not the reason why Craigslist did what they did.
They are asking Craigslist to explain why they had an erotic services section, why they had an adult services section, and what the implications of those are, because the committee is looking into sex trafficking. So on the face of it, they just want information. Up till now, it was assumed that they were going to vilify Craigslist, but now it seems like Craigslist is using it as an opportunity to make a statement and maybe turnabout is fair play a little bit there. Instead of fearing or denying the summons, it sounds like maybe they're going to have this guy go and say, look, this is why we took it down. This is what you've done. And this is what you should consider when you pursue these sorts of policies about adult services section, because Craigslist is probably feeling a little singled out, that there are so many other places where you can put these kind of ads. And I'm not defending the people who illegally traffic in women and children, of course not. But Craigslist is the place where you put ads, and they were cooperating with law enforcement. There are plenty of other places that where you can put the ads like this that weren't cooperating with law enforcement. So Craigslist was just a higher profile place to pick on.
I'm not buying it. Sounds fishy.
All right. Thank you, John. HDCP master key has leaked out onto the internet. Engadget reporting that the key that controls HDCP, that's what prevents you from being able to display high-def content on a non-approved device. If you've ever had a monitor plugged in, perhaps, and it says, oh, I can't display this iTunes video, that's the kind of thing you're running into. It makes sure that there's no analog hole. You can't copy anything from your Blu-ray player. That's it can only go to the television receiver and play it. If they have actually cracked this, it means that anybody will be able to make a copy of any high-def source, any Blu-ray source, just like you can crack a DVD with the DCSS code.
This is kind of an odd thing because right now it's just rumored around. There's no actual software to like take advantage of this and make your Blu-ray player into some kind of high-definition recorder just yet. So I'm saying that if DVD John is watching this, please take the master key and do something with it because I'm kind of curious to see where this is going to go. I'm very excited about this change because it's going to basically force Hollywood's hand. Are they going to try to change the Blu-ray players with the firmware and basically say all these other Blu-rays won't work because that code was cracked? We're giving you a new code. Or are they just going to have to try to deal with this in a new scheme?
If you want to look at this key yourself, it's a 40 by 40, 56-bit hexadecimal array of numbers. And to generate a source key, you take a 40-bit number that consists of 20 ones and 20 zeros, and that's the source KSV. Add together those 20 rows of the matrix that correspond to the ones in the KSV. Take all the blah, 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 right? So that they've got the code listed. Now, the proof will be if somebody can take this code and create some software that will rip out the high-definition content from Blu-ray. So, you know, they're saying, hey, we cracked this code. It's been known since, I don't know, early 2000s that it would be possible to get the HDCP code master key reverse engineered by knowing enough of the other keys, right? So every source and every sync, every Blu-ray player and every television has their own key. If you could find those out, those can be changed, but you might be able to reverse engineer the master code out of enough of them. They say about 50 of them would be what you need.
First of all, when you were explaining that whole thing with zeros and one, I was going like, yeah, totally. I totally get that. And second of all, I know a lot of people are going like, taking the hacker's approach to this by saying, see, Hollywood, your protections don't work and they're no use and you don't, you know, you're just inconveniencing your customers. And I sort of tend to be sympathetic to that approach, but still, I think in this case, the reality is that HDCP code sort of worked for, what was it, 5 years or something? It protected their content as they thought it would for quite a few years, and we're not quite at the point where everyone is going to be able to copy these discs easily. So I think it's sort of too premature to say, this teaches a lesson to Hollywood. I don't think that teaches anything to anyone. Well, it still worked. And
if you could say the same thing about DVD, but the idea is that anything can be cracked eventually. And if this code works out, which I have a feeling it will, then it's a game changer for all of that. And the fact of the matter is, how much high-definition content has been kept off of the internet by HDCP?
Certainly. Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I'm just saying that in their minds, HDCP worked for X number of years, which was good for the use they got.
Was it, though?
They got a few good
years. Did they actually prevent anything from really hitting the...
No, of course not. Yeah.
All they did was inconvenience people. What this will do will be allowed legitimate users to work around the inconveniences that HDCP can sometimes cause with glitchy or incompatible hardware.
Well, maybe you guys should look at the big picture.
I was going to say, good for me for taking the devil's advocate argument. I just got crushed. Thanks a lot.
I'm thinking about the bigger picture. I mean, when DVD got cracked a couple of years later, we got Blu-ray. So Blu-ray gets cracked. We're going to get something way cooler in a couple of years, right? Like super high definition or ultra high definition. Because they'll be like, oh, that Blu-ray? Oh, that's obsolete now because it's old. Not because it got cracked.
And we should point out, Blu-ray protection is different than HDCP, but what this allows is for you to be able to capture that signal and record it.
This is going to affect a lot of Blu-ray players because they are the ones that usually have the HDCP handshake on one side. It's always like your one device has to talk to your other device And if that fails, it's just annoying. And I guess we'll see what happens there. I want to see the hacks on Blu-ray drives, but I mean not drives, but the actual players, because I like that kind of stuff.
Well, actually, Tom was talking about not preventing anything from getting on the market. Who uses Blu-ray anymore? Anyway, I mean, going forward,
more people use Blu-ray than used to. The sales figures have been going up, so. I don't think. Will it ever get as pervasive as DVD? Is a good question. A question for another day, perhaps. But a good point. Let's move on to a very confusing ruling by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. They had originally ruled that the government could not, or police could not seize data and use any data they found. So the case was the feds had found a hard drive. They were looking for specific data. They found some other data on there that implicated the people who owned the hard drive. They wanted to use that in court. Court said, can't do that. It's not like walking into a house with a search warrant and finding some marijuana on the table when you weren't looking for marijuana. You can't. It's different. You have to only go after the data that you are meant to go after. It's a privacy issue. So what the feds did is they came back in what the appeals court did was create all these guidelines for how to go after data, what data you could go after. The feds said this is way too cumbersome, where we're losing cases now because these guidelines are too strict. So they went back to the court, and in a 9-2 ruling, they nullified the guidelines and basically said that police should be really careful.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah. They said that they should use, quote, greater vigilance on the part of judicial officers in striking the right balance between the government's interest in law enforcement and the right of individuals to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. Well, okay, I knew that. I've read the Constitution once. Why wouldn't I know that? This takes specific guidelines that arguably were too cumbersome and replaces them with no guidelines, which is, don't do anything wrong.
If the guidelines were unworkable and they were basically being used for, actually no good, what's going to happen is a whole new set of cases are going to come through, and you're going to build this big body of case law to see, okay, this search was reasonable, this one wasn't. This search was reasonable, this one wasn't, and so on and so on, unless an actual law gets put into place, and that probably won't happen. You're probably just going to see a bunch of new case law. Plus, this could, I mean, eventually something like this could go to the Supreme Court and have it all settled there. But I mean, just because the old regs got thrown out or the old guidelines got thrown out doesn't mean I don't really think it's going to be a free for all. You're going to see what is reasonable being asked over and over again, which is going to be fun for lawyers. So have fun, guys.
And this is probably not going to get appealed because essentially the comprehensive drug testing lab that was being sued, they win because the feds still can't use the evidence that they found, right? That they weren't going after. The feds win because they're like, look, we got rid of these cumbersome guidelines that were getting in our way of doing our jobs. So really, nobody has a vested interest in taking this to the Supreme Court. You're right, Ayaz. This is going to come back again.
I can never hear that enough. You're right, Ayaz. So you'll probably say it again.
I probably won't. Intel has got a very interesting explanation of why they have bought McAfee. There was a Intel Developer Forum conference. Paul Otellini framed it as an effort to move the way the company approaches security from a known bad model to a known good model. John Stokes over at Ars Technica has an excellent article explaining what that means. Essentially, what it looks like Intel wants to do is create a system where applications would have to be signed in order to execute on Intel processors. That sounds pretty horrible off the top, doesn't it?
It sounds terrible. It's like basically every single criticism that people have about the App Store model applies to this model also. It's basically only if you've been signed or approved by, you know, for security reasons, you can execute on that platform. Now, if that platform is a phone, a mobile phone, or, you know, a tablet or something like that, it's not that big a deal because we're used to it. But if it comes into the desktop space, then it becomes a little bit worrisome. I mean, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that.
See, I'm thinking the enterprise is really going to love this kind of thing, because when IT wants to go ahead and put software on anything, any machine, usually people freak out. They're like, oh, no, this isn't going to work. But if Intel has this kind of walled garden approach, at least it'll be easier for administrators in that field. Now, if you get to the consumer space, I'm a little freaked out personally, too, by that. But I'm thinking enterprise-wise, this is pretty good. Plus, I think Intel has some shares, part in mobile phones. So they'll be able to sign off on applications that way too.
Yeah, remember back in the day when Intel put the Trusted Computing Initiative into place?
Oh, yeah.
This
wasn't that sounds, Microsoft?
Well, there was Microsoft Trusted Computing. Maybe I'm getting the names mixed up. But Intel was creating a system where they would keep a key on the processor, and that processor would have to be, and the software would have to be authorized to execute on that. And this sounds very similar. It was a Microsoft Intel cooperation. Now, what it's aimed at, from what I get from this article, is it's aimed at Google TV, Mego, mobile devices, devices where you don't have people expecting to run every single application out there. It's not going to work very well on the desktops, although Stokes points out in this article that you could do a similar thing to what we do on the web for secure browsing. So as he points it out, the company could set up a number of trusted signing authorities for x86 code. Developers could approach any one of them to get their code signed for distribution. And this would be like submitting an application for an HTTPS certificate. So just like if you want to have a secure website with secure transactions, you'd have to have secure software and be trusted software. The idea is to essentially get rid of malware. Say if it's unapproved code, it won't run. But do you throw the baby out with the bathwater there? Or does making this trusted computing system as easy to use as it is on the web for any website that wants to be secure, is it still open enough that we can get open software?
Well, Puncher Joe in the chat room had an interesting point. So it sounds exactly like HTTP for code. I mean, you're going to need a handshake. So, I mean, well, maybe people will try to crack it, but I don't think it's that horrible a thing. I mean, I don't think it'll be bad as HTTP. So I'm not really feeling that.
Wayne Dixon, yes, thank you. Trusted Platform Module was what I was trying to remember. That was the Intel TPM chip or the TPM security device from the Trusted Computing Group.
Well, definitely, if there are platforms that need to be highly secure, things like, I don't know, planes or cars or stuff like that, maybe it does make sense in that setting. And once you get sort of comfortable with the idea, maybe your aunt or your mom could use a computer that you don't need to go and clean up every year because it's ridden with malware. It might work.
I think you're right, Patrick. I think that's the way. The temptation with this story is to look at it and go, they're going to put this on every computer and it's going to ruin the world and we're not going to be able to make programs and we're not going to be able to write our own programs anymore. And that's not what's going to happen. I mean, the fact that everyone freaks out about that is why it won't happen. But we may be able to put something in place in limited areas, like you're saying, like devices meant for people who don't want to have a lot of options, or airline devices or things that need high security. So let's not fear it too fast.
Sorry, before we move on, the chat room is talking about copy protection. Could that be used for copy protection too?
Oh, sure, yeah, it could. You believe me, if this catches on at all, the MPAA and the RIAA will be knocking on Intel's door asking for some keys, please. We would like to stop any unauthorized video from playing anywhere on anyone's computer. Now, Intel's not going to allow that because they're a consumer electronics company and they have to work with everybody else who doesn't want that to happen. So that would be an interesting conversation to be a fly on the wall during, though.
Or maybe AMD is going to use this as their new ad campaign. We're open. We like everybody.
Yeah. Well, that's true. We do have competition, thankfully, in this space. Not a lot, but we got some. All right. Very interesting study coming out of the economists Shane Greenstein and grad student Ryan McDevitt. And if it's Greenstein, I apologize. They researched broadband pricing between 2004 and 2009 in an aim to figure out, did we get better competition after the deregulation of broadband? And the answer is not so much. Speeds doubled, which is good. It's not as good as you might want, but it's good, over that 5-year period, but prices only declined 10%. And normally in technology, prices decline very steeply. Think about Moore's Law and the doubling of transistors and how it's often interpreted into meaning that your chips will come out and get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and so that every generation of a device, say a laptop, is cheaper than the previous one. That didn't happen with ISPs.
Is that just because ISPs are run by old telephone companies and cable companies? They're not exactly known for being swift like technology companies. I mean, technology companies are always trying to make something new and faster and better. And the older companies like telcos are usually trying to like put their heels in the ground and slow down change. You think it has anything to do with that?
Well, Greenstein thinks it does. He says that by now, broadband companies should have paid off almost all the costs associated with building out their infrastructures, and you would expect to see competitive pressures leading to price drops, and he's not seeing those.
Well, I agree with basically everything he's saying, except for the fact that it has nothing to do with Moore's Law. It's like saying, why aren't the prices of vacuum cleaners, decreasing? It's not because you have electronic parts in it that the prices should go down in the same rate as computers. I mean, you have the infrastructure, you have the cabling, a lot of things that have nothing to do with the price of the silicon. So I'm not sure where he's coming from here, applying Moore's Law to broadband.
Well, I was doing that, and I was doing that based on a story on Technology Review. I don't think he uses that necessarily in his paper, but it's a good point, which is maybe ISPs just don't work that way. But there have been a lot of examples of other systems where ISPs' costs have gone down and speeds have gone up quite a bit more. And I think what he's trying to do in this paper is say, what did we get for our deregulation in 2003? It looks like we got almost no competition. We got very little drop in price, and we got a doubling of speed.
Well, in that department, then, yes, absolutely. I would say that deregulation is not always a good thing, and that the telecommunications space in the U.S. is a glaring example of that.
Yeah. At the end of the Ars Technica article on this kind of sums it up for me. Greenstein's construction of this index tells him that the market isn't functioning as well as it might, though the fact that prices decline in the face of inflation shows that things are moving in the right direction. Maybe with different policies, they could move faster.
Sounds kind of depressing right now to even think about that. So thanks,
well, let's
guys.
Cheer you up and show you a funny ad.
Okay.
Amazon taking it out on the iPad. You know, they're sort of in competition. The Amazon Kindle reads ebooks and surfs the web, sort of. And the iPad reads ebooks, does a lot of other stuff. But they're trying to say, hey, you need a Kindle if you want to read ebooks. And let's take a look at the ad that they're showing. It's like a Corona ad.
Excuse me. How are you reading that in this light?
It's a Kindle. $139. I actually paid more for these sunglasses.
Why did you pay so much for your sunglasses, lady? That's ridiculous.
This is like
I paid like $5.99 for mine at the Shell station.
This is like comparing roller skates to a car. Like, oh, wow, you can pick your roller skates up above your head? Big freaking deal. I mean, the Kindle's a great single-purpose device, and it's really great when you're on the beach hanging out by the pool. Okay, that's a really interesting use case. But what about all the other times you want to do other stuff other than reading? I have both a Kindle and an iPad, so I'm mocking them both. Yeah, the iPad's incredibly glary. I hate the glossy screen idea. It's on everything nowadays, but that's like every laptop. It's just a ridiculous commercial.
You know, I'm just sick of people positioning themselves endlessly towards Apple. Like, no, we didn't talk about it, but, we did a little bit. Nokia is doing the same thing. Everyone is doing the same thing. Even that commercial is sort of Apple-ish a little bit with the white background at the end. And this annoys me to no end. And definitely, you're right. But... does that commercial accomplish what it set out to accomplish? Aside from the fact that they are doing a commercial about going to the beach and to the pool when we're getting into winter, that's an aside, it does tell people that thing will allow you to read anywhere you are in any situation, and it's super cheap. So if you're thinking about getting an iPad, maybe look at us because we do some stuff that you might like. And I think in that sense, the commercial works.
Oh, yeah, for $140. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, back when the Kindle came out, I think it was at $359, which is a much harder sell than now. The $139 price, you know, once it hits $99, I think it's going to be a lot easier to sell it to everybody, even if they have other multifunctional devices, because it does, like, it does one thing really well. I mean, that's there's something to be said for an item that can do that, because that e-ink display is really good in almost any condition. But does it make, you know, does it make people want to buy Kindles? I guess we'll see how Amazon's bottom line looks with that.
I want to see the other ad where she's inside trying to surf the web on her Kindle, and he's like, I got no problems.
I'm by the fireplace, and I can see my iPad. Can you see your Kindle?
And then he's like, why are you always using your Kindle? Aren't you here with somebody? All right.
Don't you hate the oh, sorry.
No, go ahead,
just
Patrick.
To finish up, don't you hate that smirky look she has on her face, though? She's like, aren't you an idiot? Using your silly little thing. I'm so much cooler with my black and white device. I'm like, I want to smack her a little bit.
Hey, but she also says she's an idiot for buying sunglasses that cost more than $140. So, like, is that the clientele you want to have? People dumb enough to buy $150 sunglasses?
Well, she saves so much by not buying an iPad that she was able to afford the glasses.
Apologist.
Let's go to the news fuse, shall we?
Yay.
Microsoft's Bing has passed Yahoo to become the number two search engine in the U.S., according to the latest data from the Nielsen Company. As is usual with these numbers, they're very, very small. Bing grew from 13.6 to 13.9%. Woo! Yahoo shrunk from 14.3 to 13.1. That's a little bigger. And Google share bumped back up again in its normally flat, jiggly way, 64.2% in July to 65%. Basically, all this means is, wow, Yahoo's switching to Bing. Bing's search engine share got a little bigger. Google pretty much stayed the same.
Ah, go figure. Adobe Systems warned yesterday of a zero-day hole in Flash Player that reportedly is being exploited in the wild and could allow for an attacker to take control of a computer. The critical vulnerability affects Adobe Flash Player 10.1.82.76 and earlier versions for Windows, Mac, Linux, Solaris, and Android. It also affects Adobe Reader 9.3.4, but why would you be using Adobe Reader, and earlier versions for Windows, Mac, and Unix. Windows and Mac. A patch for Flash is expected on 9/27, around that week, and updates for Reader are coming sometime the first week of October.
Google blacklisted and blocked the Pirate Bay after a vulnerability in their OpenX ad-serving platform caused malicious scripts to be executed on the site. The ads exposed visitors to Windows Trojans.
Not the first time that's happened to Pirate Bay either. According to a study out of York University, individuals higher in narcissism and lower in self-esteem spent more time than others on Facebook and filled their pages with more self-promotional content. They also were most likely to think the study was about them.
But I'm always on Facebook. Oh, well, anyway, Juul Unlimited has received patent number 7,794,969 for an engineered form of cyanobacteria, or blue-green algae, which grows in water and is capable of secreting biodiesel fuel. The company asserts that it can make diesel fuel directly using only sunlight and waste carbon dioxide in glass bioreactors. Yeah, that's what it says here. In glass bioreactors for as little as $30 a barrel.
Well, I'll believe it when I see it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. For a limited time, you can get a TiVo Premier DVR for free as long as you agree to a two-year contract for the TiVo service, which will cost you $20 a month. That's more expensive than the normal $13 a month, but hey, free TiVo.
Clearwire announced it has started operational readiness activities in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco during this phase. 4G service will be available in the selected areas, sometimes, when it works. Clearwire did not announce specific dates for when the cities would be fully covered, other than by the end of the year. Occasional 4G service is also coming to Tampa, Miami, Orlando, Nashville, Denver, Minneapolis, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh, as final work in those markets is completed as well.
And Intel plans to bring their next-generation Atom processors codenamed Oak Trail. They like oaks and pines, but this is the new one. It's Oak Trail. To market early next year, the Oak Trail system on a chip will consume half the power of current Atoms on average, allowing hardware manufacturers to slim their devices down and possibly dispense with active cooling.
Well, I'm actually looking forward to those. And by the way, some people in the chat room are like, what's this 4G? What does 4G mean? Well, for Clearwire, it means WiMAX. So there you go.
Yeah, and for everybody else, it means LTE.
It just means faster, unless you're T-Mobile, in which it means literally like just kind of faster, even though it's really 3G. Finally, a man lost a house and almost lost a second one over email. An international cybercrime investigation has been conducted into a man in Western Australia who lost his home while he was out of the country. A neighbor informed him that a house of his had been put on the market and was in the process of being sold. He then found out that another property of his had already been sold in June. This guy had too many houses to keep track of, it sounds like. The thieves are believed to be Nigerian, had got enough information on Mildenhall, that's the guy's name, to satisfy regulatory requirements, put the house on the market, claim the deed, sell it, and collect the money.
By the way, this is an actual brick-and-mortar house. This isn't like a houseboat or a trailer. This is an actual building. So be afraid, I guess. And this is such an interesting story.
Dude, how smart are the Nigerian scammers getting? I mean, getting to your house and putting it on the market? That's, well, not your house, but one of the many houses you own. So I guess you need to not be paying too much attention to not notice that this is happening. But still, I mean, we're kind of far from that, I need a couple thousand dollars to get my fortune out of the country scam.
How could you not notice one of your houses sold?
Well, if you have, 20, you might not be checking on them all the time.
Yeah, I guess if you have
apparently
a lot of houses.
That guy wasn't.
How many houses do you have, Patrick?
I have roughly 20, so I'm going to go check.
Yeah, you better keep an eye on it. All right, let's look at the calendar. There's a rumor out there that Google TV might officially launch on October 17th. This comes from an internal memo that Engadget is showing off. This was saying, where was this memo from? My page just blanked on me.
Best Buy?
It was a Best Buy memo saying that the launch of Google TV that was planned for October 3rd has been pushed back 2 weeks. So we may be getting Google TV by October 17th. Tomorrow in London, HTC is going to announce a bunch of new phones. So we'll keep you updated on that. Also, it appears that Verizon, at a conference on September 21st, may be announcing their own app store called the VCast App Store for Android phones. This would replace the Android marketplace and work more like the Apple App Store, in which it would be very restrictive, and Verizon would approve every single app that goes into it instead of the more open Android marketplace.
Would that replace the App Store on existing phones?
It would probably be through a firmware upgrade, I bet, an over-the-air upgrade. Yeah.
So what happens to the apps you've already bought?
They'll still work. See, that's the beauty of Android. You can sideload programs. So, this would give you the best of both worlds. You could have the trustworthiness of an approved app store, but if you found an app that wasn't in there, you could still put it on your phone and it would still execute, I think.
Hmm.
Microsoft will launch the IE9 beta Wednesday, September 15th at the Beauty of the Web event in San Francisco. A launch event for a beta. Betas have really come into their own these days.
The beauty
good
of the
them.
Web.
And also on Wednesday, September 15th, the Diaspora project goes open source. The source will be released into the wild for anyone to play with. Of course, Diaspora, if you don't remember, is the open sourced version of Facebook. It's not built on Facebook's code, but it's meant to be like Facebook, an open source social network. In fact, Zuckerberg actually gave him a little money, apparently. So there.
Yeah.
On to our voicemails. 260-TNT-SHOW is the call number. That's what I call it. Most people call it a phone number, but, sometimes my brain shorts
out. It's like a call sign mixed with a number.
It's nothing like a call girl. But you can call it 260-TNT-SHOW, leave a message, and this person did. This caller says he has a voice-controlled remote.
Amazing.
Hey, good morning, Tom and everybody. You've been talking about voice-controlled remotes. I've had one for, about 10 years now. I simply say, Ashley, get up off the couch and go change the channel for me. Works every time. Thanks. Really enjoy the show. Listen to it every morning on the way to work at 4:45.
Wow.
Have a great day, guys.
Well, good morning. And keep your eyes on the road. Keep that coffee coming. 4:45. That's horrible. It took a long time to program your Ashley remote. You're developing one of these remotes, right, Iaz?
Yeah, I happen to have a different model. We call it the Aldrin. And he doesn't do much of that yet. He's working on projectile vomiting.
Yeah.
So
towards the television?
Towards the television remote that's in my hand. Gotcha. So he's trying to kill his predecessor. So it's some impressive stuff.
It's a very expensive remote.
On the right.
Too.
Yeah, the thing I'm not really getting is why would that caller not, you know, have that voice-controlled remote get up and go to the TV? They could just be less cruel and have them press the button on the remote. It would still be very efficient and voice-controlled, but it would be less painful for the remote.
Maybe sometimes. Sure maybe sometimes. I don't know how the Ashley model works, though.
Mm. Well, maybe the Ashley's working with a television that actually has an old dial.
Those remotes, like, those remotes do more than just change channels, though, too.
Oh, yeah, they also make sandwiches.
They can mow lawns and babysit.
Fantastic.
Yeah. On
take
to the
that, Harmony.
On to the emails to Logitech Harmony can't do that, can it?
Stop that.
On to the emails to TNT at twit.tv. Our first one comes from Benjamin. He says he saw the TNT where we showed off PlayStation's attempt at viral marketing, the Yay Buttons site, yaybuttons.com, where they tout the great benefits of having a motion controller with buttons. Well, Kinect fans, don't hang about. YayNoButtons.com has been registered and pretty much does what you'd expect. It points towards the Microsoft Kinect site and touts, like, oh, how awesome Microsoft Kinect is.
Yes. Like, and
That's sort of funny. It's done in good fun. I mean, it's not dirty marketing. It's sort of, look, buttons, they're super cool and fun. And
I don't think it's an official Microsoft thing either. It's a frame of the Microsoft Kinect site. So I think it's just somebody domain jacked and was like, I'm going to make this happen.
Yeah,
maybe he was expecting a job from someone like the instant YouTube guy.
Right. Yeah, right. And you got the next one.
I do have the next one. So hello, TNT. On TNT 70, you talked about warrantless cell phone tracking, and I was surprised you all seem so blasé about it. I would thought you'd compare it to using IP addresses in copyright cases as identification. To me, getting cell phone locations only gets you the cell phone location, not necessarily the location of the person law enforcement is interested in. That's from Adam in Connecticut. There's also North America and Earth. That's my reaction.
Well, if you've watched The Wire, you know you need multiple ways to prove where the person was. And so having that cell phone location on its own isn't the only evidence you need, but it is an element that can help bolster your case.
The Wire? Are there any shows that talk about The Wire? I don't know.
You haven't seen The Wire? Oh, man, you need to watch that. It's a great show.
You just get any chance you can to talk about The Wire now that you've actually watched it.
Have
Tom,
you watched it,
you?
Pat?
I've been telling you it's awesome for like 2 years.
You should watch it. It's really good.
I hate you.
All right. Thanks, you guys, for being on the show. Patrick, go ahead.
Before we leave, there's this new HTC announcement thing. They're probably going to announce new models. I just want to ask you, what do you think the names of the models are going to be? I'm rooting for the unicorn and the rainbows.
The amazing, the functional, and the wow.
Not bad.
I don't know.
All right. Ayaz, do you have anything?
Well, let's see. Samsung took all like the names I was thinking of, like the Vibrant, Captivate. So these will probably be like, so they already have the desire. Maybe it'll be like the Want, the Lust, and the Call Girl.
Not bad. Yeah, I just think all those names are silly. So there you go.
Thanks, Patrick. Let people know where they can find you on the internet.
If you want more silliness, you can go to patrickbeja.com, where you'll have all the links to my various social media endeavors. And if you speak French, you might be interested in nowatch.fm, where we have lots of French podcasts.
And Mr. Ayaz Akhtar, what are you pushing today?
Today I'm pushing thisoldnerd.com. That is the site where I do a show called This Old Nerd. It's about putting a lot of tech in your home. So if you have an apartment, if you have a house or a condo, whatever, hell, if you have a pop tent, I'll show you how to put tech into it.
Yep, and make sure that people don't steal it, right? Over email. Twit.tv/TNT is our website. TNT at twit.tv is our email address. And 260-TNT-SHOW is our phone number. Please do give us a call and watch us again tomorrow or listen. We know a lot of you listen, and we appreciate it. Thanks for doing either, and we'll see you tomorrow.